What do you think about people saying that the land investing world has been changed specifically by having an influx of new land investors coming in?
Oh, I don't think so at all. Probably if you're looking at the numbers of how many properties that land investors are selling as opposed to just to the general public, I think it's probably really, really small.
Very small amount of people actually doing land investing just in general. And if you compare the amount of people doing a lot of deals versus people who are doing only a few deals a year, I really think there's just so much opportunity left still.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit podcast. Maddie, so great to be here once again.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Okay, great. So Heather is on hiatus again this week, and you are filling in. And, you two look alike, so some people may not even notice.
They may not. She's just too busy for us today.
Yeah, I guess she's got other important things going on. I don't know. Anyhow, today we are talking about a very interesting topic, a very timely topic. And the title of the episode is Land Investing Dead?
Spooky. For Halloween.
What do you think?
What's your first reactions? Is land investing dead?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay, well, I've got a bunch of things written down in this paper that we're going to discuss, and we'll just see how it all plays out. One thing, if you haven't listened to or watched the Turning Profit podcast before, is that we kind of have it broken up into two segments. We have the initial section where we're talking about our timely issue, and the second is that we are answering questions from our land investing community.
Yes.
And if you haven't been to our community yet, you can go check it out at Land Conquest. And that's on the school platform, SKOOL. So easy way to find it is just SKOOL.com/Land Conquest. And you'll find it there. So we've got a free community there. It's about getting close to 5,000 members, very vibrant community. And we talk about all things land investing, lots of free resources and things over there. So we'd love for you to check it out.
A lot of good discussion there.
The community is actually getting close to being 2 years old.
Yeah.
So very established.
Wow.
Yes.
That's unbelievable, but it's...
Yeah.
I mean, I do believe it.
Yeah. So anyone that joins the community starts as a squatter.
Yeah.
And the more you interact in the community and everything, you can kind of eventually climb the
land ownership ranks.
Yeah. So what are some of the others?
Land baron is one of them.
Land baron. Okay.
I think you might be that.
Governor. I think I'm a governor status.
Oh, okay. My apologies.
I don't know that there's any other level sevens in there except for me, but what's your level in there?
Oh, I don't remember.
What's
I'm
your
like level
status
five,
in the community?
I think.
Okay. Well, level
I don't
five.
Know what that translates okay, to look into it.
So let's get into the topic for today, Maddie.
Awesome.
So is land investing dead? And the reason we're doing this is because 2024 has been a little bit of a tough year for some land investors.
Yeah, I've been seeing that a lot.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah.
You know, I've been seeing the chatter around that, hey, things have been tough this year. Things aren't selling like they used to. All these types of things. And the point of this episode is to kind of get into maybe why some of those things are happening.
Yeah.
If this is a long-term trend, if land is going out of favor, if this is just a blip in the radar, or if that's not even true at all. You know, maybe that's not even real. Maybe things are crazy and for land investing now, and for some reason their properties aren't selling. But I don't think that's true. So for us, all I can talk about is what we've noticed.
Yes.
And we have a considerable amount of inventory all over the country. So by last count, we own properties currently in over 20 states.
Wow.
20 out of the there's 50 total states.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You learn something new every day. So there's 20 states that we own properties in now. We've actually bought and sold properties in 25 states.
Yeah.
So about half of the states, and we're looking to get into the other 25. You know, so we're in kind of a wide range of markets.
Yeah.
And one thing I've noticed is that some markets are just as busy as they were.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, they're still like, as soon as we get a property there, properties sell right away.
Yeah. And we know that they're good ones too, before we even put them on the market. We know.
Yes. Yeah. We know it's going to sell. It's a good property. It's a great market.
Yeah.
You know, things are happening there. Other markets, we've noticed that things are slower than they used to be.
Yeah.
Meaning properties take longer to sell.
Yeah.
We have to sell them for less than what we originally anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, price reductions and basically less profit than we anticipated.
Exactly.
The challenge is that when we're looking at comps, mm-hmm. you know, we're looking at things that have sold in the past. We're basing, you know, in a lot of these markets, we have based our projected values based off of what the comps show.
Exactly.
And in markets where things are declining or correcting or just not as busy as they used to be, then we're not kind of hitting those historical numbers.
Yeah.
So like the comps are adjusting.
Yeah.
So especially if we're taking a look at, you know, some of these rural markets, we can't find recent comps.
Yeah.
So we're going back further and further, 12 mm-hmm. months. In some cases, we have to go back 24 months, mm-hmm. which is certainly not ideal considering 24 months ago, in a lot of the markets, things were a lot busier, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
These are things that we've been noticing. Mm-hmm. Days on the market, longer days on the market. I don't know specifically. I'd have to kind of do a quick study to see, like, this year, mm-hmm. you know, how our days on the market have changed as opposed to previous years.
But
I know that it's increased.
Yeah, definitely.
And if we want to force the issue and sell a property quicker in a market like this, then we've really got to reduce further.
Yeah, really reduce it. And I would say it's noticeable. I wouldn't say it's had like a massive impact. I don't know if I would say, but I would say it's definitely noticeable.
There's, I think, a number of reasons for this. First of all, you know, I'm going to get into some of these things that maybe caused some of these things that we're experiencing this mm-hmm. year. First of all, you know, to kind of set the scene, a lot of land investors, us included, we really started getting into the market post-COVID. I mean after COVID hit.
Yeah.
You know, like, we were actually right in the middle of it when we started getting in the land business. End of 2020, beginning of 2020. Yeah, end of 2020 is when we got into it.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, the land market was actually really, really shooting up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we had just a number of factors that were all combining mm-hmm. at the same time to kind of be the perfect storm for land. Some of those were remote work was one of those things where it was starting to really become the norm.
People were thinking, you know, I don't have to live in these cities anymore. I can go live the life I've wanted and live out really anywhere I want. So they're saying, okay, well, I'll just go buy some land that I've always envisioned living on, but I can actually do it nowadays.
And actually, to tie in with that, at the same time, there were a lot of advancements in remote high-speed internet
exactly.
for some of these rural areas.
So it was more viable.
Yeah. So what's the one? Starlink. Starlink.
Yeah.
Starlink was really starting to take off. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, a lot of those rural communities, the internet access options previously were pretty poor in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might have been like a DSL or even some of the older satellite technologies that just weren't that good.
No.
And we've tried some of those before because we used to kind of live in a more rural area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super frustrating to live in an area like that and to try to get any sort of internet-based work done.
Yeah, that has definitely been made a big impact, is having that internet access, because I think that's was something that was, even not for work,
mm-hmm.
even if just for using the internet in your day-to-day life, I think that was something that was drawing people away from living in a more rural space
mm-hmm.
Because so much of our lives are online nowadays. Mm-hmm.
It's tough to really live, you know, a modern life, I guess you could say, without that high-speed connectivity to the internet. You
mm-hmm.
know, anything from streaming TV mm-hmm. to, you know, video calls, Zoom.
Yeah, or even booking appointments for some things.
Yeah, like any of that stuff is a real pain unless you have high-speed access. Want to learn the secret to building a thriving land flipping business? Head on over to landconquest.com and join over 2,000 passionate land flippers leveraging the power of community to scale quickly. Sign up for free at landconquest.com. All right, let's get back to the show. And then the other thing was, at the time, and it still is, housing shortages.
Yeah.
So housing shortages, it's still a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's not going away anytime soon.
No.
It just kind of hit the fan, I guess you could say, at that point, you know, like when COVID hit, you know, like, I was guilty of this myself. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, oh, the real estate market is going to crash, you know, like the housing market is going to crash, you know, once COVID hit, but it actually did the exact opposite.
Yeah.
So there was, in many areas it shot up, some areas it shot up like almost 30, 40, 50%, you know,
crazy.
So the pricing in a very short amount of time. So it was kind of crazy. That was kind of the landscape we were dealing with. We were dealing with a market that I think was artificially propped up and inflated by some of these other things that were kind of going on, kind of all happening at the same time. They were, you know, maybe it's not artificial in some way, but it was just kind of things that were out, kind of outside the bounds of what of what normal market activity was. Mm-hmm. So those are all combining to be a perfect storm. And it was great for the land business.
Yeah.
You know, things were, anytime we bought properties, we could pretty much sell them. You know, a lot of land investors are always talking about, I could buy anything, you know, in 2021 and resell it. You know, like properties that, not maybe not such a great properties, but people would still buy them. There was just a limited inventory of lots and properties out there. So what's happened in 2024? Mm-hmm. Here's what I've identified, at least for a number of the reasons why things have not been as crazy as they once were. First of all, interest rates. Interest rates are one of those things that puts kind of a damper on the real estate market, meaning it's costlier to borrow money, costlier to get a loan. And although in the land market, you know, a lot of the deals get done are cash.
Yeah.
Some of those cash deals are most likely probably on loan from some other property. They could be a HELOC. They could be, some other form of loan or something like that, land loans as well. But, and then as well as builders buying infill lots and everything like that, there is financing involved there as well. So interest rates, they started being going up in 2022. And since 2022, there were 11 hikes in interest rates.
Wow.
So it's not like when they do an interest rate hike or the mortgage rates increase or whatever, it's generally not an overnight thing where it's just like, oh, now things, the market changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a gradual thing. It's a very slow moving ship.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the cruise ships, you know, they don't turn fast. And,
no.
You know, it's a very slow moving process. Have you ever been on one of those things? So it's kind of like the real estate market is in that way. You know, we've got these continual interest rate increases, and then that's putting downward pressure on the market.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, we didn't see a lot of change in market demand, and like things were still, you know, even after all those interest rate increases, it really wasn't having a huge impact on things.
Mm-mm.
But the farther we are away from those, the more impact now it's kind of accumulated, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Also in 2024, I think there's just kind of a natural regression to more of a normal market conditions.
Yeah.
You know, normal market conditions, you know, prior to COVID and everything, you know, it's just more of a balanced market, you know, equal number of buyers and sellers in a lot of markets that are desirable and, you know, just more normalcy.
Yeah.
And I think just sort of a natural regression to that. Things aren't always going to be crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point that this isn't, what we're experiencing now isn't necessarily abnormal or wrong. It's just kind of regressing back to where it was. So I think it's kind of, people are saying that, oh, there's something wrong with the market. But I don't think that's the case. I think it's just there was something kind of wrong with the market before in a good way for us, but something was off. But now it's just coming back to normal.
And then the other thing that we're dealing with in 2024 is the election uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking to a number of brokers that have been involved in land for quite some time. This happens every election year, you know, that we get people kind of standing on the sidelines. I don't know what they're waiting for personally.
No.
You know, like I don't know how any of that's going to change my decisions in life or what I'm buying and selling or anything like that. But apparently some people have those things in mind that they're, you know, they're going to wait to see what happens.
I do have something to bring up, but what do you think about people saying that kind of specifically for land, the market, or rather the land investing world has been changed specifically by having an influx of new land investors coming in? I see that a lot, is people saying like, oh, the market's getting oversaturated with land investors, and that's why there are issues.
Oh, I don't think so at all.
No,
I think probably if you're looking at the numbers of like how many properties land investors are selling as opposed to just to the general public, I think it's probably really, really small.
Yeah.
I really
don't think it plays a part at all. And I mean, even if you compare it to like house flipping or something, this is like very small amount of people actually doing land investing.
That's
compared
right.
to that. And even not even comparing it to that, just in general.
Yep.
And if you compare the amount of people doing a lot of deals versus people who are doing only a few deals a year, I really think there's just so much opportunity left still.
If you've ever flown across the country, you know, say flown from like Florida to California or something like that, and just daydreaming, looking out the window, probably you'll notice that the majority of this country is just wide open space.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost unbelievable. I mean, everything's kind of concentrated around the cities and towns and big metropolises. But aside from that, there's just so much undeveloped land out there.
I was looking at statistics a few days ago, and it's something, I don't remember the exact numbers, so I won't say them, but it's a staggeringly low amount of the country is urbanized, cities or developed towns or anything like that, or places where people are living. It's a really staggeringly low, like I think single digits percent of the country.
Yeah.
So there's so much land out there. Can't even really fathom it.
That means there's a lot of opportunity for land investors.
Exactly.
Next, you know, let's tackle this question. Is land investing dead? And I guess we jumped the gun a little bit. And you probably know, if you know us at all, that like we're big fans of land investing. We feel like there's a lot of opportunity in this space. And you know, so I don't think it's gonna go anywhere anytime soon. First of all, a couple of key things that I jotted down here. There's still a tremendous shortage of new homes that we need in order to meet the demand, the current demand. So various organizations, National Association of Realtors and other larger housing-related organizations, the estimates fall anywhere between 2 and 5 million home shortage currently.
And that's not even counting like recreational land, which is a big bulk of what we deal in.
Yeah. There are a tremendous amount of homes that need to be built that currently aren't being built because generally the permitting process, you know, potential, you know, shortages of contractors, supplies, all those types of things. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are really trying to catch up. But that this is over and above, you know, what gets currently built each year. There's a huge amount of homes that just like as a baseline get built every year.
Yeah.
This is above and beyond that like we're at some point we're going to need to fill that gap. You know, like and, you know, many think that number is going to keep increasing. Something's got to be done about that. And the thing about it is, for all those homes, they need land.
Yes.
So obviously, that would be, you know, home developers and, you know, that would most likely be able to create a lot of those lots from larger tracts of lands and everything like that. That demand is still going to be there. In addition, interest rates are now going to be softening likely. Yeah. So we just got a rate decrease for the first time in 2 years or multiple years. Actually, 2022 is when they started increasing. Mm. I don't know when the last rate decrease was. It was during COVID, I guess. But 2020, maybe something like that. So it's interest rates are now going to, there's kind of hopefully going to be going in the other direction. Mm-hmm. And like we talked about before, it's kind of a slow moving ship. Things don't change instantly, but that should have some, pull some things in the other direction eventually. Mm-hmm. Also, we've got less inflation on building materials and the supply chain is actually evening out.
Mm, nice.
During 2022, I think 2021, 2022, there was lumber prices shot through the roof.
Yeah, crazy.
Lumber prices. It was hard to get materials of any sort. You know, anything that was coming from overseas. I remember looking out here, and you probably remember too, like Long Beach Harbor, you could see ships that were, you know, the container ships that were out there.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't even get into the harbor because there were just such a backlog of, you know, ships and maybe a shortage of people to unload them and everything like that. And there was probably 20 of them that you could see off the shore that were just like anchored out there, like waiting for their turn.
It's crazy.
You know? And then we had crazy stuff happening like that. The Suez Canal got blocked for a while there.
Yeah.
And that put a huge kink in the global supply chain of everything. You know, China, they were not producing what they previously had produced. So it just took so much time to get that work through. And I think we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel at a lot of that type of stuff. Inflation, you know, all the inflation type indicators are showing much better than they previously were. So I would imagine that's really going to help the home builders out. Mm-hmm. And if the numbers work for them, they are going to be buying land to build more homes. The election will actually be over in November.
Yeah.
So
it's coming up. That's next month.
Yes. I just want it to be over and done.
I know.
I'm sick of all these like political commercials and all this political stuff. So we're not a political podcast. So we're not going to talk about it. I just want to be done. I want it to be done. Boost your land flipping earnings with our new Land Conquest business system. It's designed for efficiency and effectiveness. This cutting-edge software tool is your key to success in the land flipping industry. Streamline and automate your operations to scale your business to new heights. With our system, you get a customizable website with 6 professional templates to choose from, up to 5 dedicated phone numbers, each with their own chosen area codes for creating a trustworthy local presence. And as a bonus, you'll get a $25 credit for SMS and email sends. You'll also get access to our tech team to build any automations or customizations that you want. And not to mention, we've got a great dedicated community to the Land Conquest business system to help us all thrive together. And with every step of the way, you get our 24/7 live chat support. But that's not all. You'll also gain access to our exclusive community to connect and grow with fellow land flippers. Seize the opportunity to transform your business. Visit software.landconquest.com to check out the Land Conquest business system and unlock the next stage of your land flipping success. There's also a tremendous supply of unused land, undeveloped land. There's so much of it.
So much. And you mentioned that taking a flight, and that's even just a really small section of the U.S. that you're going over, and the amount of undeveloped land that you'll see is staggering.
Yep.
So, and again, that's just a very small percentage of where your plane goes over.
Yeah.
Need to look up those numbers, the specific statistics and everything, but it really is crazy.
Yeah. One other thing that I this is kind of just an anecdotal thing, is that there really seems to be a big push to manufacture more and more domestically here in the United States. Mm. And when that happens, you get large corporations announcing that they're building a new plant here, or something like that. And anytime they do that, that spurs home building, that spurs people wanting to move to that area, yep, and just more progress happening. So it just seems like there's a lot of that stuff happening all over the place. Mm-hmm. And our economy, and it brings me to the next point, the economy is still very healthy.
Yeah.
By all the indicators, there's always kinks in the armor, but I guess as a whole, it's still chugging along pretty decently. And then the demand for housing is still very substantial.
Yeah.
We're not going to be eating up that home shortage anytime soon.
No.
When it's tough for people to buy an established single family home, they might be looking at a piece of land and then build their own home.
Yeah.
Or buy a piece of land, put on a manufactured home or something like that. So that's a very common path for a lot of our end buyers.
Exactly.
So getting into the analysis section.
Ooh, nice.
So I think, and this is maybe just an opinion, but based off of these facts and things that we've discussed today, many land investors were spoiled by the crazy market conditions after COVID.
Yeah.
Us included, things were easier back then. And I guess when you're going through those things that you kind of think, oh, this is the way it is and this is the way it's always going to be.
Yeah.
But then after really evaluating, the real market conditions and really what's happening in the world, you somewhat realize that, okay, well, maybe that was crazy times.
Yeah.
It would be great to always have those crazy times, but that isn't quite reality. So this is a return to more of the normal conditions. So one thing that's really... I don't think we say it enough, but we probably should say this quite a bit more on the podcast. But the principles of land investing are important.
Yeah.
For us, it's always been about buying quality properties and then selling them for aggressive price.
Yeah.
If you're simply just buying and selling land, like if you can buy properties that are quality, so you have a quality product that you can then resell and then offer them for an aggressive price, you'll sell it and you'll sell it quickly.
Uh-huh.
In good markets, too.
Yes,
I should add that.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's kind of the next statement on here. Avoid markets that don't have much activity or much going for them.
Yeah.
So you'll find your life a lot easier if you are working in markets where people actually want to buy right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The best example of this is that, maybe this is an extreme example, but, say you get a lead on a infill lot or a lot inside a like a small rural town that maybe was a train stop, you know, in the early 1900s or something like that.
Used to be great, but
yeah,
nowadays,
it used to be a bustling town, but nowadays it's not, you know, there's not no industry, there's no building there, there's nothing happening. So yes, you may be able to get a good deal on that piece of land, but who are you going to resell it to? Who's going to want to actually build on that property?
And
as opposed to buying in an area where there's just tons of things happening, you know, like Toyota opens a new plant there, or, you know, all these factories being built around the area and all this stuff happening, you know, there's actually going to be a demand for that piece of land, and, you know, for someone that would want to ultimately build a home there.
Exactly. So, I would say it isn't like completely impossible to resell a piece of land in those areas if you're getting it cheap enough. But why make it harder on yourself? Is really what it comes
cheap.
Down to. That's kind of how I look at it.
I agree, Maddie. Okay, so, you know, in kind of summary on this point, you know, we're still selling a lot of properties and making, you know, substantial profits. It's harder than it was last year, but we're still doing very well. But I expect 2025 to continue and slightly improve over 2024. You know, hopefully we're past the election uncertainty, interest rates trending down. So I feel like we're poised for kind of a little bit of a resurgence, maybe. I think 2024 in hindsight will be seen kind of as a correction year in many of these markets.
So,
you know, correction is kind of like maybe knocking it down a little bit, you know, like, so things don't always go up like this. It got knocked down a little bit and then you know, maybe going like this. We'll see.
Well, sounds good to me.
Well, now let's transition into our next segment of the Turning Profit podcast, and that is our questions from our community.
Perfect. I'll read them out. Okay. So the first one, hello, LC fam. I got a call from a seller today who basically wants to give away his property because he's tired of paying taxes. Property is 13 acres and is landlocked, but with an easement. The issue is he owns 8 acres of the 13, with the remaining 5 being divided with 5 other siblings. He says he wants to sell his 8 acres only, but I don't think that's possible. Is it? Properties in Person County, NC.
These types of things come up. They come up sometimes where you've got a number of different heirs that own a certain property. Sometimes these heirs don't even know each other. Sometimes they don't know how to contact each other. Sometimes these heirs don't even actually know that they own a portion of the property. Our experience has been that it's very difficult to get any of these types of deals done. You know, it's just like, say you owned a car with 6 different relatives, you know, and you got one relative that wants to sell it, one relative that wants to use the car every once in a while on the weekends, another relative, last you heard of them, they were in Key West, and, you know, you know, who knows where they're at, you know, like, so you've got these situations with all these heirs. So like in that type of situation, how are you going to sell the, how are you going to sell the car? How are you going to sell the property? Because first of all, getting agreement might be tough. Locating the heirs might be tough. And then you got to get them to agree on the price. And then you have conflicting interests. You know, you might have one heir that lives right next door to the property and they use it all the time. And they're like, this is great. I don't have to, you know, my cousin pays all the taxes and I get to use the property and no one can say anything about it. So these types of things happen. They come up a lot. And basically, they're looking at you to kind of solve their problem. Now, generally, you're not able to solve it, though. You know, unless you're willing to put a ton of effort into something that
may or may not work.
So anytime we see those, we just kind of like,
stay away. Because you could put in all that effort and you could get 4 of the 5 owners to agree. And then the last one, the one that you finally get to a year in, is the holdout. So you spent that entire year trying to get everyone else to agree, and you still aren't able to make the deal come together. It'd be great if it was just dependent on your effort, but it's not. You have 5 other people to deal with.
And personalities and conflicting interests and all these kinds of things. So, and then, you know, they've got to agree to a price that works for you.
For this one, it's a little interesting. It says the one owner owns 8 acres and then the remaining 5 are divided with the other 5 siblings. So it could be a situation where those 8 acres were split off and the owner still has an interest in those other 5 acres, but the 8 acres were split off at one point. So it might be worth looking into that just to see.
Are you looking for funding for your land flipping deal? Then head on over to partnerwithpete.com. It's an innovative new funding program where we split the profits with you 50-50, but we take it one step further and we handle every other step of the process in the land flipping business. Yes, that means we handle all the due diligence. If the property needs any value add, like clearing brush, perk test, survey, we'll get that paid for up front. Then when the property resells, we split the profits 50-50. There is absolutely no downside for you as an investor. If we lose money, we don't pass that on to you. But when we make money, when we make profit, we split the proceeds 50-50. So as a recap, we handle every part of the process. We split the profits with you 50-50. There's no downside for you as the investor, only upside. So go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and we'll get it checked out within 24 hours. If that were the case, sure.
But
I guess I didn't listen to the question fully.
Yeah, it's okay. but I think it is more likely that it was just a complicated situation all around.
I should say a caveat too, because sometimes you've got a situation where the family has their act together.
Yes.
You've got one person you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. They have everyone's contact info. They're kind of like the lead and the point person on this. They know that they're doing all the negotiating.
Yep.
They'll coordinate all the stuff on the back end. Those work.
Yeah, those work. And those ones I actually get excited to see.
Yes.
Because that means that there likely isn't going to be any issues.
Right.
And oftentimes they're good properties too.
Yeah. Yeah, we've gotten some good situations out of that.
Yeah. So. And the other thing I would say, just a little side note on this thing, you mentioned it being landlocked but with an easement. I would not consider that to be landlocked.
Yeah. Yeah, if it has an easement, that's
Yeah, I see that a lot. People kind of comment that things are landlocked, but with an easement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think that's landlocked.
Yeah, landlocked would be, at least our definition of landlocked would be that has no legal access to the property.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to the next question. This one says, blind offer price that was way off base. I'm looking for advice on what to tell an owner whose blind offer was way overpriced. For some reason, this particular county's pricing was off in priced. The offer ended up being approximately 80% of full market value. The property is pretty close to perfect, so I can't use that as an excuse for coming in lower. Is honesty the best policy here? Do I tell them we use a service to price and it was wrong? Thank you in advance for any advice.
We did a whole episode on this. So if you look through our previous podcast episodes or videos on YouTube, you'll see that we talked about this one specifically. So this happens all the time.
Yeah.
This is the norm. Like it's rare that you're going to kind of hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many variables with raw land.
Yeah.
You just don't know unless you're looking at every property individually.
Yeah.
You're just basing it off of averages. And, you know, if the property's nicer than average, if it's a perfect property, maybe you can spend, you know, higher than you initially thought. But, you know, probably it sounds like you're still way too high on the property.
Yeah.
So it's just simply a matter of having a discussion with the seller. Mm-hmm. You know, just you can always tell them that you didn't see the property in person.
Mm-hmm.
I would just have a discussion, build a rapport with them, you know, ask them, you know, some questions about the property and kind of dig into any of the potential issues and then go from there. And then ultimately it's going to come down to like, hey, based off of your particular property, here's what I can do. And ultimately if they want to sell it and they want to sell it for that price, and
they'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say is it looks like was used to do the pricing for the county. So the whole county's pricing was off. That's why we don't recommend using services like that typically.
Yeah.
We'd prefer to just do manual county pricing. It's not going to be perfect. It's still going to be a starting point, but it typically is closer than using a service like that.
Yeah, and I've experimented with that, and maybe I just had the settings wrong. I don't know, but it's generally from what I hear, you know, it's a good way to, I guess, just get it done with one click.
Yeah.
But you know, you might be farther off with something like that.
Yeah. So. All right. This one is multiple channels of marketing. Hello. I'm thinking of doing a cheaper strategy than mail in order to get more deals. How have you guys been using cold call and SMS to get consistent deal flow? Any help would be appreciated.
We use basically two avenues in order to get our deals at this point.
Yep.
We use direct mail, like we have been since the beginning. And about a year ago, we started using pay-per-click.
Yep.
So that's basically where we use a service and they put ads on Google. Like when someone types in sell my land fast for cash, one of our ads will show up sometimes and they click through that, fill out a little form, they get entered into our, you know, our whole lead flow, and we try to put together a deal. So those are the two things that we use. We have experimented with cold calling, not doing the cold calling ourselves.
No.
I didn't hire a cold call or anything, but we hired a service that's what they did.
Yep.
We had a lot of leads coming in and like zero deals from it. Yeah, and we sent a substantial amount of money as well. So for us, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we were doing some things wrong. But, you know, I've heard of some other investors that that's working for. Mm-hmm. SMS is another one of those things. We've never tried SMS. I was about to really dive into it. And then there started to be lots of regulations coming down the road with all these carriers, and they make it really difficult to say what you want to say.
Yes.
They have a lot of banned words, and it's just kind of fallen out of favor.
Yeah.
A lot of investors, they were getting a lot of deals from those things, and I hear less and less of that.
It's such a finicky thing to get right legally, unless you're doing like a real consistent deal and lead flow. Maybe it's a little too finicky to deal with, at least for us.
Yes.
Last question of the day. This one is response time. If you send out 1,000 letters a week for 4 weeks, on average, how long would it take you to receive all of the responses?
So first of all, you've got a couple of things to deal with. You know, say you send out 1,000 letters and it actually gets mailed this week. Then it typically takes 10 to 14 days for those actual letters to hit the mailbox.
Yep.
Generally, people aren't like opening the letter and calling you instantly to talk about your amazing offer.
No.
If they do, they're probably calling to yell at you for the offer price being lower than what they had thought their property was worth.
Yes.
So you get those right away. But, you know, there's typically we put expiration dates on our offers. Mm-hmm. Those are not hard expiration dates by any means. It's kind of just a way to get people to incentivize people to call.
Yeah.
So we do notice that, you know, we do get a flurry of calls for that batch of mailers. You know, generally we do it 60 days out. So we get 60 days out, you know, people start calling right before the deadline. We've been getting calls from some of our older mailers, like a year out.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes people just hold these letters and
for the right time.
Yeah, for
when
the right
time.
For them. Yeah,
exactly. So to say all of them, you could be getting them forever.
Yes.
If someone finds it buried under a stack of papers on their desk, they're like, oh, okay, I forgot about this.
Yes.
Interesting.
I'm going to call Maddie and see if she still wants to buy my property.
Well, I might.
Yes, she might.
I'm not going to give any definitives.
Yeah.
I don't know the property.
But I have to say, you know, just I have to make the comment. If you're sending 1,000 letters per week, I know that sounds like a lot, but that's really not a huge quantity of letters.
No.
So I'm not sure how many actual, there's a lot of factors that go into how many calls you'll actually get from that. You know, the area, the amount of, you know, the percentage pricing that you did, the types
targeted
of properties.
Yeah.
Yes. So you may or may not get many calls from that.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah. I guess the answer to that question is it could be a while.
Yes, it could.
It could be a while. I mean, but you know, if you're looking at percentages, if I just had to put a percentage on it, I'd say you'd probably get, you know, 70% of the calls within 2 months of mailing.
No, that sounds right. Yeah.
So did you have anything else to discuss today, May?
I don't believe so. No, yes. I think we've covered everything.
Yes.
And I would say maybe we should answer the question again, having gone through everything. So is land investing dead?
Not at all.
No,
not at all.
I don't think so either.
I believe it will be flourishing in the future.
Nice.
Yeah. A couple quick housekeeping things. Like I said, we'd love to see you over in our land investing community.
Yep.
And that can be found. It's called Land Conquest. And you can find that on the school platform. You can even just search word on that platform or just go to school.com/landconquest.
Yep.
Also, if you are a private lender looking to possibly partner on some larger deals or something like that, I'm always looking to expand my network. So go to lender.turningprofit.com. And there's a little form on there to fill out. We can get on a Zoom call and talk about what you're looking to do and how we may be able to work together.
Awesome.
And I guess that's about it.
Yeah.
So hopefully you join us for our continuing episodes of the Turning Profit podcast. And I thank you for stepping in for Heather.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's up with her lately.
I don't know. I don't know where she's at. Too busy. Anyhow. Well, thanks, Maddie. I appreciate it. This is a good episode. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.